Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Brian Zembic, who gained fame as the man with the $100,000 breast. Brian is a successful gambler who's made a career out of making proposition bets and winning most of them. We'll be talking to Brian and about his bets shortly. In the news recently, you may have seen the video of a Bet Online blackjack dealer who very obviously dealt second to a player. If you haven't seen the video, if you check out Richard's Twitter account by Googling at RWM21, or check out the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page, you can see it. Richard, what did you see on the video?
Well, it was just blatant. A guy doubles down, and the dealer just pushes the first card up in the shoe and pulls out the second card. And what makes it really blatant is the fact that the shoe is translucent. Not just translucent, it's
transparent.
Transparent, yeah. So you can just see the card get pushed up and the second card dealt. So, yeah, very clear case of cheating. And it's just mind-boggling that they would be so bad at it. And I have to say, it's fortunate that all of the cheating that I've run into over the years, it's fortunate that they have been so bad at it, because it becomes very obvious when they cheat. Of course, now, if there were some really good cheating, maybe I just never caught it, and I just lost my money. So.
Well, this particular one was for basically a low-stakes player. Had a $50 or $60 bet, something like that. And if you're going to cheat somebody, might as well do it when they have $1,000 out there or something. Why would you cheat them when they have the little bets? Because the more you cheat, the more likely you're going to get caught eventually.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you are playing at an online casino, so, you know, I've certainly been stiffed by online casinos. Anybody who's played a lot of them has. It's buyer beware out there.
You know, I would definitely think that a lot of casinos, online casinos, they're happy with taking small players, small as well. Nobody's whatever. Just like Bob said, a lot of, people might not even think, why would you cheat me for such small stakes? It couldn't happen, so they let it slide under the rug,
right? Or they think it's not worth.
It's just not worth. It's not worth the hassle.
Raising a stink over.
I can't believe the dealer would actually do it like that for small stakes. Like Bob said, I'd go for the big bucks.
Well, it had to be the casino, right? It can't have been just the dealer, right? Because he's dealing at an online casino where there are cameras on him. And the people who are gambling on their computers and just watching the interface. The dealer doesn't get the money, you know? So, but I have to say this, though. I've played a lot of online casinos. I mean, more than 100 different online casinos. And our track record with the major software providers, Microgaming, Playtech, RTG, we had no incidents of cheating, and our data showed we actually were ahead of expectation after hundreds of millions of dollars in action. So if you stick with the more reputable casinos, I don't think you have much to worry about, but I don't know this particular casino.
I guarantee if I was running this place, we would never get caught. Absolutely never. I just don't understand these guys.
That's I don't know if that was a job application or not. Let's move on to a different subject. Since the Oscars recently, we'll talk about Hollywood, except this was Hollywood, Florida, at the Hard Rock Seminole Casino. A player was playing top dollar slot machine, $25 coins, two coins, so $50 per bet. He got to a bonus round. And there was a lady friend, I get the idea, it was friend with occasional benefits. He said, well, why don't you push the button just for luck? Lucky she was, and a $100,000 jackpot emerged. The casino ended up giving the money to her because she was the one who hit the button, Never mind, he was a known high-limit player, and she was basically a penniless grifter, at least according to the unbiased opinion of the guy who wasn't paid. He yelled and screamed that the money should go to him, or at least be paid to nobody until it can be straightened out, to no avail. She ordered the security guards to watch him while she went to her car to make sure he didn't catch her and take the money from her while she was going to her car, and other two guards to escort her to her car, and they all did. He's got in touch with Nersessian. Nersessian said he's got a winnable case. Nersessian's not licensed in Florida. Gave him the name of somebody. The players had trouble getting a hold of that person. It's called several lawyers there without success, and the Broward County Legal Association has said no attorney there is going to sue the Seminoles. Richard, what do you make of this?
Well, first of all, it's an Indian casino. I don't know if there is any kind of gaming commission in Florida. Obviously, that should have been the first call he made while it was still going on. You know, I think there's a good chance, you know, she was paying off somebody at the casino. It just seems weird to me that they would come up with this ruling. I've never heard of something like that. Now, you know, if she had promised to split some part of the money with one of the guys working at the casino, or, you know, who knows. But, yeah, it actually reminds me of a story. When I was a dealer, I was dealing to a guy one night, and he had a hooker with him. And we were having a good time just talking, and they ended up leaving. And the next day, the guy comes back to me, and he goes, you haven't seen Jackie, have you? And that was the hooker he was with the night before. I says, no. And I said, what happened? And he said, well, last night they had gone to the Sahara, and they were playing, and he was getting ahead, and he wanted to pocket some of his winnings. So he...
The old rat hole trick.
Right. Well, except he just pushed her 2,000 in chips, and he said, go cash this out for me. And she said, don't ask me to do that. And he said, no, really, it's fine. Just go cash it out. And she said, please, do not ask me to go do that. And he said, really, really, it's okay. Just go cash it out and come back. And... She left and he never saw her again. And I, you know, and he said, I'm the idiot. She told me, you know, not to do it. I mean,
it sounds like a buddy of ours that plays backgammon. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
On occasion, I've had some people play hit buttons, but it's always been a family member. And with my previous wife, Shirley, her mother would come to town to visit, and Virginia could go to the casino with me or go to church with Shirley, and somehow I always won. But when we would go into the casinos, I would explain, this is my mother-in-law. She's babysitting me today. We're going to be playing on my money. If there's a jackpot, it's going to go to me. Does that create any problems for you? Almost all casinos said, no problem at all. As long as you're physically here and there's no, and she's not playing by herself. And I said, that will be the case. And at least once they said, we can't have that. If she hits the button, she gets the money. And so I didn't play there. But, but that's how, so I would not have had this particular problem. But it's scary.
You know, when it comes to money, you never know. You expect the worst. We all know Gus. All right. He was playing backgammon in New York against the guy who actually started backgammon, the big bucks, the crocodile. Okay. Mm-hmm. Which is unbelievable. So he brought his friend in, who was a very good friend of his, another Dane. And Gus wasn't there. And next thing you know, he won like, they were playing $1,000, $50,000 or $100,000. And they're going to give Rasmuth X amount, you know, the win. Came back and Rasmuth said, well, I deserve all of it. I played him. I mean, and this is his best friend. And when it comes to money, you better have this in writing.
Yeah.
Unless you're dealing with Svobo and you know you can trust him.
We're going to talk about Svobo later. I promise you. Okay. Different subject. We received an email addressed to gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com, addressed to Richard. Richard, you have a rather distinctive voice and have been doing this radio show for several years now. Further, you play uncarded at table games in most casinos. Have you ever been recognized in a casino because of your voice? And if so, what happened?
You know, I actually have been quite worried about this for quite some time because I figured eventually it is going to happen. And it did just a few weeks ago. When I play table games, I tend to try to keep my mouth shut as much as possible. I really try not to talk at all if I can. But I was in a place, I was just playing some video poker and ended up starting a conversation with somebody, and the guy goes, "Hey, I listen to your show every week." And that was the first time it had happened.
But this was a player.
It was a player.
Who was cool about it.
Yeah. So, as I say, well, you know, I'm trying to be retired, so I'm really not playing that much anymore. But it is something that I am concerned about, and I do try to keep my mouth shut if I'm playing.
Yeah,
if
you
I'm
can
at the
change
table.
Your voice. Just like actors, you know, they talk deeper.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can easily do that.
Yeah, but you have to constantly be conscious of it. You know, you have to constantly be thinking
but
about
talk
it.
Talk deeper right now. I bet you there's a big difference. Just talk from the bottom of your stomach.
Sounded a whole lot like Richard and me.
Yeah, I can't get very low today.
Yeah, well, that's it. That'll do the trick. That throws people off.
Yeah, yeah, I guess it, yeah. But yep, this I is... knew it would happen, you know, eventually, and sure enough, it did.
All right, let's talk to Ryan Zembic, professional gambler for decades, among other things. Now, you came to be well-known because of an article in Cigar Aficionado by Michael Koenig. And it was called The Man with the $100,000 Breath. And I guess you could say you were Exhibit A, or maybe Double D or something. I don't know. How did that come about? What happened?
Well, I'd just like to say that Svobo's version of the story is in Gambling Wizards. So we've heard his version of the story.
Yeah, I've never read the game. I didn't never listen to Svobo's. We never even talked about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Shame on you. It's a great book.
No, I have the
book.
I know
the author.
I've never read it, though. No, I haven't read the book that was about me, the $100,000. I haven't even read that. I've just read the part about the blackjack, the second chapter about the team. That's all I've read. The rest, you know, is like they eat a lot of fillers and they try to sell the book or whatever. But I don't know. I really don't know. So I'm going to tell you my version.
Okay,
I mean, this is the truth. Not that some of these TV shows, I mean, it doesn't matter what I tell them, they just change it around. So seriously, I was sitting in a restaurant, I think it was in Switzerland with Svobo.
Which is Mike Svobotny.
Oh my God, is he hates having his name said.
Well, but he...
It's Svobotny with an S, V. Okay. he always says, "Do not mention my name. Never, never." So I won't. It was Bob. Okay, and Munchkin. Yeah, so we're sitting at a restaurant. Don't forget, I've always got something rambling in the back of my mind how to make money anyhow. Okay? So I had, how much could I hit this guy for anyhow? Don't forget, I've already had a lot of motorcycle accidents. I've had operations like seven already, nose, cheek, you know. So it was like no big deal for me having an operation from the motorcycle accident. So I've already thought about this before I even sat down at the table. How can I get Svobo for a couple bucks? No, I'm serious. I mean, he's going to hear. He might not even ever hear this.
So I bet.
He is one of your best friends, right?
Oh, he's my best friend. Yeah,
right.
Clearly.
Okay.
I just finished talking to him today. I didn't tell him I was going to do the show because I know he'd say not to mention my name. Mike, are you up there? Okay. No, he would say not. So I'm already thinking, how can I get him for some money? All right. So I've already decided what's the most bizarre thing I can get him for. I came up with the boobs myself. And now I have to endorse that into the conversation because I know Martha's there hanging down with her boobs there, right? And she likes to be seen. So okay. Mike, I swear to God, she's talking about, look at this guy's looking down my top. And I said, Martha, if I had tits like you, I would get just as much attention. I would get more meals and I'd probably make money on them. Don't think just because it's you with boobs. And I know I put the carrot in front there. Mike just like a bozo he is. He's really oblivious to things, right? He goes, fine. All right. You think so? You get boobs put in. I go, all right. How much? I can't remember how it went. It went like 50, 75, 100,000. So I thought 100,000, that might be the cutoff point. You want to get enough to get your foot in the door, but not too much to get it slammed in your face, right? You know, if I would have said, so I said 100,000. Now I made sure there was other people at the table for witnesses. So I said, deal. And I thought, I better shake his hand right away because he's going to fall for it. Once I shake his hand, Mike is a sucker. So I shook his hand. He goes, deal. And that was pretty much, and we talked about it for no more than a minute or 2 minutes afterwards, after that. And then, the weeks, the months go by, I really forget, this has been a long time. Now
there were some stipulations, right, about the size.
No, and... you're right. The size had to be the same size as Martha's. She had a C cup, okay? They have to be, okay, these are the, we did lay down the ground, but they have to be C cups, the same size, as big as Martha's, okay? And you have to keep them in for a year. And that was pretty much it. So now it goes by, and Mike, he gives me a stock tip, Imatron, some scanning for bombs or something like that. And I bought like $125,000 worth. And as the stock went to $6 a share, it went from 5 or 4 to 6. I said, is this the news? Is this the news? Should I sell? He goes, no, I'm buying. So this is when I loaded up to 125,000. Then I found out the sucker was actually selling. All right? And the stock at 625, within the next couple of days, it just tanked 5 to 4 to 3. And now I'm like really ticked off now, right? I find, Mike, you said that was the news. And he goes, well, you know, that's what he told me. And, you know, a bunch of blah, 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 blah. Like Mike, no, you know, he doesn't know anything. So now as the, you know, months go by, I'm like, look at, I want this. I'm stuck like 60,000. I have my money. I want my money back. And he keeps on saying, well, I tell you, want your money back, put the boobs in. And he goes on. And I said, Mike, what's the matter to you? If you lose it all, just get the boobs in. So this was said many times. Okay. So now I decide I've had enough. I want my money. I want the boobs in. Okay. So now they decide, Martha's saying, no, Brian, you can't do it. You can't do it. You could die. And Mike is saying, no, something could happen to you. You could die in the tape. This all goes on. And I said, look, I'd rather die than lose all my money. Okay? So now.
I'd rather lose all my money.
No, so we have this titty tribunal.
A titty tribunal?
Yeah, so all of us, not me, they go in a restaurant, this Italian restaurant, and Mike lays his case down.
Because he's saying he doesn't want to...
Yeah, and I don't think it wasn't really a bet. He should have put him in. It was a kind of like he could hurt himself. So it was like I didn't think he was going to do it. So then all I said was, but Mike, you remember when I was losing my money in the market, you kept on saying, put the boobs in, get your... And he goes... This is how honest this guy is. He goes, you know what? I forgot I said that. You know what? You're absolutely right. You know, I don't care if they come out of the titty tribunal and say the bet is off or on. The bet is on. It's up to you because I said that. That's how honorable this guy is. But it just turned out that they actually voted in my favor. You know,
I think they just wanted to see you get
right. So Mike, but he still doesn't think I'm going to get the boobs in. So now I'm thinking, who's going to put these boobs in me? I mean, you got to go through some psychological testing, I'd imagine, like, you know. So now I phone up my surgeon that did the operation on me in Batista Fernandes in Portugal. And he goes, yeah, come on over. You know, he's worked on my nose and my cheeks for the motorcycle. He said, come on over, I'll do you. I know a plastic surgeon in Putangi in Brazil. He was the guy who started the breast surgery. He said, Brian, come on over, fly in. I'll do him for free for advertising. And I'm thinking, well, I don't want to go to this guy. Brazil's a long way. It's going to cost me a fortune. Lisbon, I'm kind of thinking, I'll go back to Lisbon, but I'm afraid Interpol's going to be looking after me from the back blackjack scams. So then I think, okay, how about my doctor in Montreal, Canada, Dr. Luzon? He said, Brian, come on over. I got an opening tomorrow. So then I don't want to really cross the border because I think it's kind of cold at the time. So then I know there's Felix Schiffman in New York. He plays as backgammon. So I said, Felix, will you put boobs in me? He goes, okay, how do you want to pay for it? I said, well, how about we play some backgammon? So he said, come on over. I'm doing some transvestite right now, and I'll be finished in an hour. Come on over. I went over to his office, which is just on Central Park Drive, just behind the Backgammon Club, the Coterie. And he says, okay. He says, what size do you want? I said, Felix, they have to be the size of Martha's. And we all know Martha, and everybody's probably held Martha's boobs before. So I didn't even have to show them, right? You know, we go, oh, okay, I know the exact size, Brian. No, they have to be a C cup. So I said, but you have to make them bigger, because if they're not exactly C, they may shrink. I don't want to have to do this operation again. Okay, so make them bigger. So he goes, okay. And he brings out the silicone pouch. He says, you want me to put them in silicone? They feel really good. And I said, Felix, but there's just a big case. They're illegal now, silicone. He goes, yeah. I said, no, forget it. I don't care how they feel. No one's going to be feeling me up. Oh, the only person going to be feeling up is when I go to sleep and you start twiddling your fingers over me, you pervert. So now he says, okay. So he gives me we go in the back room. We play backgammon for it. You know, we're playing like 100 a point. I beat the guy in about 45 minutes for like $5,000 in backgammon. He absolutely goes on tilt. So I got the operation for free and to take them out for free. So we make the appointment for a week later, and I bring Martha in with me. I say, Felix, they got to be – Felix grabbing Martha's boobs. They got to be as big as Martha's. I say, Felix, don't mess with me, okay? Because I don't want to do this again. This is serious. He goes, yes. So I'm lying on the operating table, and I'm having second thoughts about
Martha
doing
doesn't
this.
Sound like a shy girl to me.
Oh, no. Martha's the most flamboyant girl you'll ever meet, and talented as well, this girl. Unbelievable. And so I'm lying on the table, and Martha's in the operating room with me. I mean, who's allowed in the operating room? Like a spectator show, right?
It's like you're having a baby.
It's incredible. I'm thinking, wow, I don't have to go through a psychological test, you know. And so Martha's there, and I'm saying, okay, Martha, get Swobo on the phone. And I say, Mike, I'm at the Felix office right now. You want to make a settlement? And Mike goes, no settlement. I say, Mike, no, look, I'm going to be put to sleep in 10 seconds. I'll take 60,000. No. Mike, okay, you got 8 seconds. I'll take, okay, that's my last offer, 25,000. No, you're not even there. I don't believe you. And all of a sudden, I'm like dead asleep. Okay. I wake up, and from the anesthesia, I'm like, that's the worst part of the operation. The anesthesia is like, because I remember all the other operations. I had at least 7 or 8 of them. You're sick as a dog. I mean, I'm like heaving nonstop. That's what, when I said, I wish I wouldn't have done it because of that. So now, I'm all patched up. I'm like patched up like a mummy. I don't have, you know, can't see them, right? I'm really like, I feel like I'm being thrown in the trunk of a car. You know, somebody wrapped me up. So, I'm at Martha's place for the week, and then and it's sore. It's really sore. It feels like you just went like 5 rounds with Mike Tyson. It, you know, it really is sore. Not so much for girls, but for guys, because it's above the muscle for some reason, where they put these implants. I don't know exactly why, but I woke up, I saw the boobs. They look spectacular. Absolutely spectacular. Unbelievable. And within a day, I'm going out with, hanging out with Martha. I'm dressing up like a girl now, right? Because this is like kind of cool. We go to these bars, lesbian bars, and Martha and myself are going out picking up girls, right? It's just absolutely incredible. I never got laid so much in the first 2 weeks of my life, right? Yeah, incredible.
Now, what did these women think in lesbian bars that were...
Well, it's not only lesbian bars, but it's normal bars too. It's like, first, I will hit them with my magic, okay? I'm not going to get them with my looks, of course. So, but I hit them with the magic, think, okay, he's kind of charming, but does charm, bad looks, charm. So I got no shot. So then I flash the little boobs, and Martha's my PR man, right? No, look, he's got nice boobs. Look, no, he does. He's got bigger boobs. No. So I whip out the boobs, and all of a sudden I'm a freak, right? I'm a freak show, and they start like, whoa, you're like a B-grade celebrity, right? You know. So now I've actually gotten some chichi from it. And not only that, Martha's best friend, who was a jeweler, I can't remember her name, she was all over me like flies on stink.
Now, what year was this?
oh my God, you'd know more than better than I. I really don't.
Was
know.
It in the late 90s?
Born in 99, so it must have been like 96, 97, right?
So 20 years ago.
So 20 years.
Don't remind me.
But so you were supposed to keep them for 1 year.
I'm supposed to keep them for 1 year. And I remember.
And you still have them.
Oh, wait, I didn't tell you, but once I got the boob jobs done and I walked into the backgammon club, I sat down and Mike came in and he said, well, show me. I want to see you have them. I showed him my boobs and he laughed. He crapped his pants. He was laughing so much. And he just couldn't stop. He just said it was the best 100,000 I've ever lost. and he said, I'm happy. And we went out and we ate, okay? But not only that, I don't know. Some stories have it. But when I got the boobs on, or before or during, I bet we all know Harry. I'm not going to bet say his name, okay? But he's a big better. He gave me another 20-1. I said they're going to make a movie, and it's going to be a bit about me. So he gave, and this is before I even had the boobs in, 20-1 on $5,000, okay? Because I was already planning. Maybe they might make a movie about this. Who knows, right? And boom, so I got that as well.
Wait, they made a movie about this?
Well, yes. Not just about me, but Lucky You. It was kind of like about Huxley, but they had a bit about me in there.
Okay.
About the table. Yeah, there's a couple bits about me in there.
Huh. And it was enough for him to pay off.
Oh, yeah. Huh. Yeah. Well, I mean, what are the odds in, you know, yeah, they're going to make a movie and they're going to talk about you in the movie. What are the odds of that, right? 1,000-1, maybe, right? So
any movie getting made at all, it's 1,000-1, right? You know? Yeah.
I mean, who would have thought they would have been, you know, you would have made books, Dinky, they would have made a movie about Dinky, they would have had me, who would have ever thought that?
Right, true. But now, I want to get back to the fact that this was 20 years ago and you never took them out. So what made you decide to...
You know what happened is, like, you know, I kind of started to like them. You know, it's like I never, like, not that I touched them or anything, because they don't do anything for me. I'm still like a boob guy. I just love boobs. But I got lazy, and, you know, they just seemed like part of me. And at the time, I was with my daughter's, well, before my daughter's mother, Anita. She didn't know I had boobs, right?
Right. So this is, you got this in before you got married. You hadn't met your future wife yet.
I'm with her for like almost like 2-3 weeks. And it got to the point where I was like, well, why don't you take your shirt off, kind of like, right? And I'm thinking, like, I really like this girl, right? It's the only girl I've liked. You know, love is pushing it, right? But, you know, like, so then I said, how am I going to do this? So I said, okay, well, this is where the book comes in handy by, you know, that Anthony Curtis published, or what's his name?
Michael Conner,
right? And so I said, you know, I better show her the book. You know, maybe that'll break the ice. You know, I'm afraid to lose her, but there's a reason why I did it. Just not
and like there's a picture right inside the back cover.
Right, right. So I said, you know, read the story and hear. And she read the story and the picture, and I left the room. I came back, and she was like in tears. She was like, how am I supposed to tell my family? How am I supposed to tell my friends? And I said, well, everybody knows but you. Everybody, they were just keeping it from you because they didn't know how to tell you. So she started breaking up in tears, and I'm thinking, okay, this is it. Most girls just get over it, right? You know, they don't, you know, no, that's it. Within like half an hour, she just like didn't care. She was all over me, like, you know, rumble in the jumble. It didn't bother whatsoever. And then it went on, and then I had my daughter, Mika, you know. And then it goes on, and then I did have a bet where I'm supposed to take these out from, you know, Michael Saul was going to bet me. I either made them bigger, and a couple other guys, make them bigger, and I was going to get, I might be wrong, 60,000. Take them out, and I get 10,000 if I take them out. And if I don't take them out, I lose 20,000.
Wait. So the choices are you either have to take them out or make them bigger, but if you do nothing, then you lose.
I lose 20,000, right? So I thought, well, 60,000 I can put them in. So now I'm talking to a couple surgeons, and they're talking to me, and I'm thinking, maybe it's time to take them out. You know, maybe Mika's, you know, she's getting the age.
Well,
you know,
you have a teenage daughter, right? So is this difficult on her?
Well, when this bet came out, I said to Mika, you know, do you want me to take the boobs out? You know, I mean, I'll take them out for you. I mean, that's no big deal for me. It's like, you know, she goes, no, I like them. my friends, you know, think you're a celebrity. The parents want your autograph, and I like being on TV, Dad. You know, just leave them in. So I said, okay, so you're not psychologically damaged, are you? You don't want to go and get breast implants yourself because I have them. She goes, no, it's okay, Dad. Just do it. So I got lazy. I was playing backgammon. And look, you know, I'm in the house all the time. I just missed the appointment. I didn't go. I couldn't get a hold of Felix in time. We were supposed to take him out for free. And I'm wondering, Felix is getting a little old now, and he wasn't very good putting him in to begin with. So I lost $20,000, you know. And at the time, you know, $20,000, I had some other bets going on. So one hand washes the other one. Like, it's not as if, like, okay, I lost $20,000, right? You know, because I just had something. I just had to give some guy magic lessons. One of the Russians that you know, they got indicted, you know, those guys and the mob and
the
that.
Bookmakers. And,
yeah, right. Yeah. He is Danielle wanted his son to get some magic lessons. So I said, okay, I'll give you magic lessons. So I sat down at the beach and here at the swimming pool. And he said, okay, teach me a few moves. And I said, yeah, okay. So he first said, well, first I want to pay you. So he threw me $20,000.
Jesus.
You know, and that was like a week. That was for a week. He took a week's lesson and that's it. He gave up, right?
That's nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, well, I don't get it very often. You know?
Right.
I mean, that's why I have to hustle my best friends out of money, you know, and things which I've done throughout the years to make a living while I'm staying home.
So what is your thought now? You're just going to keep them unless some other good betting opportunity arises to do something with them?
You know, I was thinking take them out because I just did that. Well, not just did it a while ago, that show Botched.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was the latest one. I have to do in the... The Man Show with Jimmy and all these are old ones, but the Botched, and they talked to me and they said they wanted to take him out. And they said, you know, he said, if you don't take him out and they just like melt in your body and you look like two wet socks with nickels in them, it still won't be detrimental. It's not going to be unhealthy. They said, you can leave him in for your life. Don't worry about it. So I'm deciding. Okay.
Two wet socks with nickels in it. That's boy, that turns me on.
Yeah. So I decided if I take them out, I'll let these guys take it out. So I don't know.
Well, plus then they're paying you to take them out, right? If you go on the show.
Yeah, well, you know, TV shows are notorious. They don't pay for anything, right? You know, they always want everything for free. But I'm sure I'd finagle something out of it.
Radio shows are like that, too.
Right.
All right. Let's... move on to another subject. One of the more there was a bathroom bet story. Somehow you had to stay in a bathroom for
30 days.
30 days, maybe. Yeah,
I had to stay in the bathroom for 30 days. And this is another one. You have to think of these things before you actually take the bets. So.
Was this a public bathroom or somebody's house?
This is Joe. You know Big Joe Thomas at his house, okay? You know, we all know Joe's been indicted in every state, okay?
Do you know anybody who hasn't been indicted?
No, but you know, I swear to God, Joe is a really nice guy. I mean, Joe is a lovable guy. He just so happened to take everyone down for millions and millions, and yet they still talk to him, right? I would consider one of my best friends. If I said, Joe, can you do this? Yes. You know, he just has that bad streak in him. So I had to stay in Joe's bathroom for a month. But I couldn't leave past the doorway. So I said, okay, I'll bet this. So they all jumped on it, but I'm already scamming them because I know there is a backgammon tournament in Europe at like the 20th of the month, and now we're at the 5th of the month, okay? So they're going to want me to play backgammon for them, but they don't think of this when you first start the bet. They, you know, people just put on blinders, right?
Right.
You know, it's just, you know, so, but I thought of these things beforehand. So now I'm in.
So you're thinking it's only 15 days, but still 15 days in a bathroom is quite a long time.
Well, it depends. It is a long time. I thought I could do it. I always thought, well, look, these guys are in prison all this time. But I had my cans of soup lined up, like X amount, and I had every day. I was in there. I would put a couple $100 or whatever. That's how much I made today to keep my my sanity. And I had my friend, a girlfriend of mine from New York, fly in, and she would just give me sexual favors through the door.
Oh, she couldn't come in?
She couldn't come in, no. She wasn't allowed in.
So was anybody allowed? Because I thought they sent people
no,
in.
No, only Joe. Joe would send his friends in to take dumps, right?
Would they eat kimchi or something really good first?
Oh, that was brutal. I mean, I'd be puking, right? And Joe is bad enough. He was the only one. Just seeing his furry butt is enough to make you puke, right?
Would they forget to flush?
Oh, anything possible, okay? But it was actually pretty bad.
Do you want to hear more about this hand job through the door?
No. Oh, my God. No. So this, and she was a sweet girl, too. She was like, not, I didn't hire her. She was a girlfriend of mine.
And did you have a sleeping bag in there or something? Or did you have to sleep on the floor?
No, I can't remember. I'm sure I had covers and I could sleep on the floor or in the bathtub. So I know I had something. I can't visually remember, but there's no way I just slept. I had a pillow and stuff like that. I'm sure there's pictures of it. And so now I'm saying, well, hey, I'm dying after 3 days. It's like you just go insane. Your brain get very groggy in that. So I knew there's no way I'm going to make – there's no way. And then I start – you know, we have to play backgammon. I got to go play backgammon. You guys are – and they start, you're right. Can we buy you out? I said I would make it – I was making it like it was easy as cake. And I knew I wouldn't last 10 days. There's no way. And they actually paid me off to get out of there. Because I figured they might pay me off to get out of there. And that was pretty much it.
You're a pretty good ping pong player.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty good. I was a national champion. And I was a top player.
And you were the Canadian national
champion. Canadian, guys. Oh, junior. But juniors were seniors. You know, just good. And then I even got better because I moved to Sweden, and I went up to the world champion table tennis player in Sweden, which was Stellan Bengtsson. And I never knew these guys. I was like 16, 17 years old. You know, my parents didn't even know I was in Sweden, and I just hopped on a flight. And I said, "Will you give me ping pong lessons, and I can teach you some magic?" And they go, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." But you know, of course, they never want to learn magic. But just so happened, it was a small town, and I would have been the fourth player. So I trained for the entire year with these Swedes, who were top players, and that's where I learned most of my magic as well, as in Sweden.
Wait, why, were there magicians you were learning from?
There was
in Sweden,
a ping pong player who said knew that I liked magic, Einar Gustafsson, and he said, "Look, I want to beat my friend Leonard Green. Can you give me ping pong lessons, and I'll give you magic lessons?" So I said, I was thinking at the time, why would I want magic lessons? I'm already the best in the world. You know, you think you're the best, right? You know, I had the best second deal in the world, which I did. And the best bottom deal, I was fantastic. But when I saw these guys do magic, they were miles ahead of me. So I ended up giving ping pong lessons for magic lessons.
Huh.
Now,
and didn't you work as a busker too?
What's a busker?
Busker, a street magician.
Oh, no, I never worked. I used to do street magic in Montreal.
For tips?
I wouldn't even take money. I would just say no. I'd never ever take tips. I've never. And I remember doing a magic on Crescent Street, and I would do it every night. You know, and I've actually lost money because I would take off my pants, and I had these funny, like, red and white Harlem Globetrotter shorts, and some guy stole my pants, right? And then I did it the next day, and I see some guy walking with my pants again. It was the same guy. But and at that time, when I was doing magic on the street, Howie Mandel was a friend of mine, the comedian. He used to work at Yuck Yucks before he was famous. And we used to do little things on the street.
Huh.
Back to ping pong. There's a story about you playing ping pong with Doyle Brunson. Now, Doyle's been known to hustle a bit himself. And you were this champion. How did you get into a... Was there a handicap involved? How was this involved?
Well, there's two parts of this, because there was, what's his name? Danny Robinson. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. Danny Robinson was yakking at the table, which, you know, is normal for Danny. And he had, he was talking to Joe Thomas. And he said, there's this guy, Ray, who's a great ping pong player, and he can beat anybody. And Ray was a U.S. champion. So Joe he's not a big thinker. Well, Brian could beat him. Yeah, what do you want? Okay, let's make the bet. So they bet, like, I don't know what it was, 20 or 30 or something like that. And Danny said to Ray, how many points can you give Brian? Joe said Brian will take 5. And Danny said, no, Ray says he'll give you 10.
Love that negotiation.
And I didn't know about this, right?
Yeah.
So then I haven't played for like 20 years. I mean, I haven't played at all. So then Joe tells me the bet. And I say, wow. I mean, I remember playing Ray when I was 17 and I beat him in San Diego. That was like, you know, 30-something years ago, right? You know, and I haven't played for 30 years. So then I went and I played Ray at the club down the street, and I had no chance to beat him. I mean, I was dead after 2-3 minutes. I knew there was no chance. So I had to, the bet was for 3 months from now. So every night I ran, every night I sprinted, every night I skipped, I practiced against the ping pong robot for 3 months. And now I'm in shape because, you know, being in shape is the big thing. So then we went to play over at the church, and there was Danny and whoever else. There was like Steve Z and all these guys. Oh, everybody, use anybody playing poker was there. And I mean, this guy's giving me 10 points. And you can tell when you're practicing with him the first 5 minutes, I can tell right away, I'm going to beat the guy. You just know, you know, he can't hit as well as me. And you reminisce what it was like. I was better than him way back then. And I played him, and I guess I beat him. I didn't need the 10 points because I was actually should have been given him points by the scores, okay? And that was it. And then now we get another bet 5 years later, the same. Now Doyle's making the bet. Doyle bet with Swobo. And, you know, the sky's the limit. So now we go play the ping pong match.
Now wait, so it was going to be Doyle playing against you?
No, Doyle's betting on the same guy, Ray.
Okay.
The same guy. So now Doyle, you know, Doyle rolls in. Mike rolls in. Together, these guys are like 800 pounds, right? You know? And you got the TV, the radio crew there, and all everybody's there waiting for – and Ray doesn't want to play. He's afraid. Now, I know Ray has no chance to beat me. He absolutely zero chance to beat me now, okay? And I've been playing for a couple of years, and I'm in shape. So now Ray doesn't want to play, and Ray walks out, and Doyle comes up to me and says, Brian, I don't know. My horse doesn't want to play. He doesn't want to – he wants to play next week. And I said, well, we're all here. He goes, well, what am I? And I'm thinking, no, Doyle, give me my money. I'm yelling at him, give me my money, Doyle. I want my money now. Brian, I don't care, Doyle. He's supposed to play on May 30th. It's May 30th. Give me my money now. Okay. And now I don't know why I'm yelling, you know. So he goes, Brian, and I said, Doyle, I can't. He said, how about tomorrow? I said, no, I can't play tomorrow. I'm going back. I have to go to Canada. I'm going to go see my dad. I have a plane ticket tomorrow. How much is your plane ticket? I says, $1,000, Doyle. He whips out $1,000. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I said, well, how about the taxi fare? Okay. $1,100 he gives me. Now, I had no ticket to go back to Canada. I just came up with that. I just thought I'd get him for another $1,000, right? So I got to it, and I'm laughing, you know, because he really did think I was going. So I got another $1,100 out of Doyle, and we played the very next day. And there was Doyle and Mike. It's like, you know, Marlon Brando up there, you know. And after the first, I was 5-0 for Ray. And I walked up to Doyle and Mike, and I said, Mike, you want to kick up the bet? And Mike and Doyle looked at each other. You know, they looked to the side, and they, no. Because Mike knows if I say, do you want to kick it up, it's a lock. You know, I'm like a lock. And then I went on to crush Ray during the match. You know, he started yelling and he wanted to have a fight with his gangster brothers and stuff like that and say, how can I believe I'm losing to a guy with tits? And I said, I can't believe I'm beating a guy with no balls, you know? And that was years ago. I mean, like, yeah, these bets come up every once in a while. See, that's a lock. I like locks. Ping pong was a lock, okay? Then I had other bets I'm sure you want to talk about, or do you want me to mention them?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, we definitely want to hear about them, and we're going to take a few minutes for commercials, and we'll be right back. We're talking some more of these Brian Zembic propositional bets that are at least having Richard and me in stitches. I hope you're enjoying it too.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In March, the major promotion will be for players who already have slot clubs and already receive mailers. Instead of collecting your usual mailer once a week from Tuesday to Thursday, this month you collect it twice, from Monday through Wednesday, and if you did that, on Friday or Saturday. If you collect all 8 mailers, you get a double the amount free play pickup on Monday, April 3rd. Instead of the normal 4 free play pickups, in March you get 2.5 times that amount of money in a total of 9 pickups. They have a variation of this promotion once or twice a year, which is a good reason to be a player at the South Point. The 7th class in the current 10-week semester of free video poker classes will be on Wednesday, March 8th. At noon in the Silverado Lounge. This lounge is the first one you come to when entering from the parking garage. The class is NSU Deuces Wild. NSU is a 99.73% variation of Deuces Wild. The name arose back in the 90s when the best Deuces game in Las Vegas was called Full Pay Deuces Wild, and worse variations were all called Ugly Ducks. When the late Skip Hughes found this game and found out how good it was indeed not as good as Full Pay Deuces, but quite a bit better than Ugly Ducks. He referred to it as not so ugly. It's possible alcohol was involved in the naming of this game. 1 week later, March 15th, I'll be teaching Advanced NSU. Advanced video poker classes cover such things as penalty cards, flush penalties, straight penalties, and in Deuces Wild, there's power of the pack considerations. Learning video poker games at the advanced level is, for me, an important part of succeeding in today's video poker climate. Unless you understand the basic of NSU, which I'll be teaching on March 8th, you'll have no chance to get value out of the March 15th class. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. Game of the week is 100 Play Draw Poker with Quick Quads. Quick Quads is a 6 coin per line game where you get extra 4 of a kinds, or quads, by ending up with 3 of a kind and the other 2 cards add up to the trip, such as 7-7-7-4-3 or deuce-deuce-deuce-ace-ace. Strictly on a fun basis, I personally enjoy Quick Quads more than any other video poker variation.
All right, we're back with Brian Zembic. One time you had to spend a night in Central Park with some money on you? Something like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a couple things like that. This is the bet I lost. There's this backgammon player, Chuck Papazian. And he bet, most of the bets are like 5,000 and stuff like this, okay? You know, generally. And you got to find a number where everyone's going to pay you off, right? And I don't have much money, so that's a lot of money. So he came up and bet, this is after a couple other bets. Okay, bet you have to stay in Central Park for the night. I jumped on it. It's got to be tonight, though. Okay? Okay. So I went to the opening Central Park where there was Chuck. Chuck and probably Swobel was there. And I go in, but before I go in, it's just about getting dark. They hand me the newspaper, and I'm reading it. And it's just, this is where they hustle me, because I'm a scared guy. I don't like going to Central Park at the time. Anyway, that's in the 90s where it's not safe, you know. So the crime was the highest in New York. I read the front page, Batman of New York, Central Park murder. There was a guy going around in New York Central Park beating people with a bat. Okay, I don't know if you ever heard that, but you can, you know, it was in there, right? And I'm reading this, and I'm already scared, right? So I go in there, and they put me in a section. Not only you're in a section there where there's all you see is a couple gay guys, you know, doing their little rendezvous, right? And I'm in there, and I heard a couple howls. I was out of there in 45 minutes. I came out, and I paid them off the money. I did not want to stay. After reading that article, there's no way.
But you were supposed to have $20,000 on you.
This one here was clearly for $5,000. I lost that. Okay, so, but that bet there, if you get the figures right, there was a bet that I had with a Ronnie. He's a gin player. I'm sure you know him. I had to go under the 59th Street Bridge for a week with $20,000 wrapped around my ankle in my little ankle wallet. Okay, and I had to last for a week. And it was in plain view, Okay, it's not as if I could just like hide it in my jeans and stuff like that. But you know, no one's gonna. And that was pretty darn scary.
Wait, you did that?
Yeah, I did that. Right, I did
so
that.
So $20,000, and the people can see that it's strapped.
Well,
to your
ankle. They don't know it's $20,000 in there. They just can't see. You know, they can't. It's like a wallet, right? But I was scared. I was scared poopless there. I mean, that's under the 59th Street Bridge in New York, if you know that area. That's where all the homeless people would hang out, okay? That was the scariest thing I did. But and I'd make friends with these all these homeless people. I'd be doing magic. And I'd be doing card tricks and that. I'd be saying how things were rough. I just lost my house. So I really laid it on like I was really one of them. So why would they believe I have $20,000? And why would I be under a bridge, right? You know, somebody would have went up and said, no, he's got, you know, then I would lose the bet right away. But that was speculation. You were not allowed to tell somebody what was going on in there, all right? Because that would be like murder, okay? So I made that one. That one I won. And the next one that came from that, it wasn't a $20,000 bet. It was to make $5,000, but I had to have $20,000 on me for that, okay? The next one outside the Coterie Backgammon Club, which was on, you know, the seventh floor, there was always this homeless guy outside the restaurant on Madison Avenue that had a box, and he lived in this box. So I'm already thinking, oh, I could live in a box, you know, and I said, okay, that guy, he's got it easy living in that box. I mean, I would like, get out of that box. I'm making fun through the window, right? So my buddy's saying, yeah, you think it's funny to live in a box? Right? I say, well, I could do it. Okay. How much? 5,000. Boom. I've already thought about it, right? But I've already talked to the guy downstairs in the box. I offered him a couple hundred if I could take his box if that happens, right? So I gave him a couple $100. And we made the bet, the $5,000 bet. I gave him a couple $100 to let me have his box area because these guys are very particular. That's my box. It's my area, right? They'll fight you for it. That's their location, right? So I had to live in that box. I could not leave that block. I couldn't have any money on me. The only money, and nobody could give me food. I had to make my own money and buy my food. So of
panhandling.
Course, yeah, well, that was easy for me because I'd pop out of the box and do magic tricks. Okay? Not only did I make the week, it was great. I ate like a king. Okay? I made money, tips. I might have made like $75 a day doing magic tricks through the box, right? It was uncomfortable in the box, but it was a good laugh. They would laugh at me through the Backgammon Club daily. They would throw snowballs and stuff like that.
Oh wow!
To wake
so
me
it
up.
Was cold.
Oh no, it was cold. Yeah, they you know they would wake me up. They'd come around, they kick the box, and they make it really tough on me. You know, for that one.
Have you done anything recently? I mean, what was the last one of these things?
Well, there's a couple that, like, I'm at home raising Meek on my own, so I have to think of some way to make money other than just playing backgammon. You know, it's like you're never a lock to win in backgammon. So I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm raising Mika. I wanted to play piano, and so I said, I make a bet. And Mika can't play piano at the time. And I know my friends all know who George Winston is because when we used to lose gambling, we used to listen to George Winston piano music. And I made a bet. I said, I bet you in 3 years I could have Mika playing piano as well, if not as good as George Winston. This is from scratch, okay? And of course. And I didn't, you know, Mika's never played piano. And I'm just thinking, I can dedicate. I know it can be done. And I'll push Mika. And she's young. She's 9 years old. All right. And it's a win-win situation. So they, of course, Swoves and these guys, a couple of his friends bet me. 20,000 a song. Three songs. I have to get 20,000 a song. It might have been more than that. Okay. But we have to get voice verification from George Winston. Okay.
Wait, George Winston had to say what?
That Meek is as good, if not better than him, okay? And we have to go out and find George. No, this was for a lot more money than that, okay? So now, I just don't want to say how much, you know, come up. So now, Mika is absolutely great, okay? She's playing piano an hour and a half every day, 2 hours every day. But I have a way of teaching her, like, oh, let's play for 20 minutes. Let's play for 10 minutes. Okay, let's play this part of the song 10 times. And pretend I'm Simon Cowell on that TV, and I gong you or whatever, right? And she would be all for it. She would say, okay, I can do better. She would do it 30, 40 times. Okay, how about what's Howie think of me? You know, and like kids, you can manipulate them, right? So now I know she's clearly good. She put a couple of her songs on YouTube. Out of the blue, I get a phone call. Hi, Brian. It's me, George. George Winston. I go, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, George Winston. And I'm like, somebody told me to watch your daughter on YouTube. Says she's absolutely fantastic. I did. I'd like to talk to her. So I'm like in tears, right? And it is George Winston, right? He talks to Mika. And throughout the, and then George, within the year, something like that, verified, you're not only your daughter plays as well as me, she's better than I am. And she's playing the songs I don't even play anymore. But and now for the last, so I won that bet. And it's a win-win situation. And Mika is even open up for George Winston now.
Wow. And George, I mean, I've heard her play. She's fabulous.
George comes in town. George, very good friends with her. George has been in the middle of a concert. He's phoned up and said, let me talk to Mika. And Mika gets on the phone. Mika, you know the songs Long in Love, Moon, and Thanksgiving? I haven't played them for 20, 25 years, but you've inspired me. I've relearned them. I'm going to play them in my concert. And he would put this mic down and play his songs. And Mika inspires him.
Wow.
You know, so it was cool. A win-win situation.
Yeah.
So now that money's gone. So now I'm thinking, how else can I make money? So can we go on? Like,
please. Yeah.
So now I'm thinking how this goes on a year. So now I'm thinking, okay, I'm back to being broke again. So, okay, I'm watching TV on America's Got Talent, and this guy comes and does a hand shadow with Bill Clinton and something like that. And I say, wow, that is cool. I've never seen that before. And I said to the regular group, you know, Swobes and these, you know, the groups, I can be better than this guy, and I can be the best in the world in hand shadows. And give me 2 years, bet. Okay. And I never done a hand shadow, but I've practiced and I practiced and I practiced, and I said I'll be better. And not only I phoned the best hand shadow guy in the world, Bob Stromberg, got a hold of him, and he may not be the best, but he's the best act. And I would talk to him on Facebook, and he would say, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he, over the months and months and months, he said, not only you're better than me, I've never seen anyone that could take it to the limits where you took hand shadows. Because not only do I do hand shadows, I morph into them. Like I can do like Bill. I go from Bill Clinton to like Louis Armstrong. I go, I repeat, I did not have sexual relations. I've seen trees of green, red rubble. And I would go into these hand shadows. And now he verified that I'm the best in hand shadows in the world. So I won that bet as well. And now hand shadows is all I think about. You've seen my hand shadows.
Yeah, I have seen your hand shadows. You know? Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have to be the best act, but as far as technical and originality, clearly the best.
Yeah, no, I we've talked about it. I would think you'd be able to get a gig in one of the Cirque shows or something.
Well, I had an audition for Cirque du Soleil because Sean, who's a very good friend of mine in Montreal, I grew up with a guy. He's partners with Guy La Liberté. And, you know, all my buddies gamble with Guy. I know Guy. He's a friend of mine. I hung out with him when I was a kid, when we were 19, 20, 21. I didn't know him, but he hung out with Sean. So it's a little friend. So he got me an audition with Les Cirque to do some hand shadows. And it just so happened, this is the first time in like 14 years I've been sick. And I was sick for a month and I didn't show up for the audition. You know, but I can always, it's kind of like, yeah, I can always do it later. Just Sean, give me an audition. You know, so because I could clearly see me doing 2 minutes, 3 minutes max hand shadows on the wall that looks like these people, like, and it's all 3 minutes. So I make a couple bucks and it'd be more fun than anything.
No.
Would doing the same thing every night, two shows one day, like eight shows a week or whatever it is that something you could do?
Well, I could do it because it would be ad lib. It's not like you've got to do this. You're working with other people where it's always going to be the same thing, right? You can do what you want. You know, so I could really kind of like when Guy had the show, Elvis was on, I think. And he invited us to the opening. And all the electricity went down in the show, right? Not only the show was a half an hour late, but there was Sean, there was Guy, you know, and there were like four seats ahead of us. And the drummers were drumming, but they couldn't hear that there was no music because they have earphones on, right? But after about 3 minutes, after hearing nothing, they just got up and walked away. And I said to Mika, okay, Mika, okay, you know what I'm going to do, right? So I got up and started doing magic for the entire theater. Okay, I have no problem with that. And Mika was laughing. Guy La Liberté, he looked back at me. I thought, okay, maybe he's going to kick me out. He goes, no, keep it, continue until we get the electricity going. You know, so I could have a good time like that. You know, as long as I don't have a total format, I'm fine. You know, if I do magic shows, I don't like doing magic shows. I feel uncomfortable. Sometimes I'm good, sometimes I'm bad. If I'm not getting paid for the magic shows, I could be great. But if you say, okay, Brian, we're going to give you X amount of money, something comes up, I don't feel so comfortable anymore. It's a hit or miss kind of thing with me. But you put a girl there who I want to pick up, huh, I'm great.
Can you saw her in half?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
The only magic I've seen you do is close-up, where with like a deck of cards or something like that. Now, that would not be really appropriate in front of a big stage. So do you do big size magic with
no?
Because you would have had no props.
I couldn't do. For one, I don't like stage magic. I mean, it just never has done it for me because it's just all gimmicks. It's like that Chris Angel stuff. It's just like he does great on his TV shows because it's all editing. Put him on stage, he's just a random magician because he can't do this trick editing and stuff like this. No, I could actually do some cards and verbally talk to the people in the crowd and keep them going for a couple minutes. But then hand shadows would be it because hand shadows is as big as, you know, put your hand in front of a light, it magnifies like 100 times. Yeah. You only need like 3, 4, 5 minutes. You don't have to go on for half an hour. I'm never going to be go on for 20 minutes. You keep it 5 minutes, 10 minutes. That's all you have to give people.
Do you still play backgammon?
Oh, yeah. No, I more study than anything. Like I'm giving lessons nonstop. My backgammon game's actually really gotten a lot better in the last 17 years because, you know, I'm at home taking care of Mika. I just study a good 8, 9, 10, 12 hours a day. You know, I'm a real, everything I do, I'm a student. You know, backgammon, I just study. I want to know. And even every day now, I'm on the phone with Sobo. Why this, why that, okay, you know. Okay, now once you know why to do the play, when you're actually in the game, you may know why and you know what's right, but still you revert to your old self and you don't do it. That's the way gamblers, they can't break the habit, you know. You got to break that habit, you know.
It's funny I should call you because I've started playing on my phone. You know, the Extreme Gammon, they have an app for your phone.
Yeah.
And I've started playing, and I often find myself saying, oh, well, it's either this play or that play, and then I choose wrong, and I don't know why. You know, that's the question. Why is that play the better play? I mean, the answer is they roll it out a million times, and this one's better, but you have to find some reasoning.
That's why I tell Swole, we'll go over one position a day. There's no use in going over 15 because you're never going to remember them.
Yeah.
You have to understand the logic. And a lot of logic is, well, if I do this play, if he misses me, in his mind, I say he's going to go, oh, crap, oh, shit, oh, heck, oh, he's going to be pissed, right? And the other play, if he misses, is he going to say that? So that tells me a lot what I'm going to do.
That
tells me a lot. Like,
yeah, I used to think about that too. What play, if I were on the other side, what play would I not want to see the guy make?
Yeah, if he misses me. You know, if he misses me, it's like, ah, God, now I got to hit him a couple rolls. That's, you think what they're, and that's a good gauge of what the right play is a lot of times.
Mm.
You know, remember I showed you a play with Wattel where I said, I ran out with a 6-2 right away and before he rolled a 2-1, I rolled a 6-5. He rolled a 2-1, came down a slot of the 5, and we rolled a 6-2. And I just ran automatically, and it was a big war we had, right?
Yep.
You know, and of course, my play was right by miles. But I didn't know, but the thinking was, if he misses, he's going to be pissed. And he thinks, a lot of people, the game's over, now I got to get lucky. That alone tells me what the right play is.
Yeah.
Because I'm not smart enough to sit down there and think of these numbers and count. I don't count pips. It's just not worth it.
When you're studying backgammon, are you using computer programs, or are you reading experts? Like Sobotny hasn't written a lot, but he's knowledgeable and you can ask him. But Rich's brother plays a pretty mean game and has written a lot of things. And how are you learning?
We don't need books anymore. Just go, you have to be able to, books, you have to, I'm better off reading, playing Extreme Backgammon because it gives you everything you need to know. And then you have to sit down and think of why the play's right. So I don't need a book or that. You know, I just, okay, why is this right? And then change the position 5 times. Okay, now it's right. You really have to condition yourself to realize you're not that good. Okay, Swobo's horrible. Okay, you know, technically he's horrible, but he's gotten better over the years.
Compared to Extreme Gammon.
Compared to me, compared to top players, he's not as good. But where Mike is good is he doesn't lose it at the table. Okay, technically, who makes the right checker play on a scale of 1 to 10? I may be a 9 or an 8. He could be a 5.
But
mentality at the table is so good that it's like same as you know in poker. If you play poker, it's not how good your A game is, it's how good your D game is. Okay? Because when you're losing, if you can keep on playing your D game is really you're still your A or your A minus game, you're always gonna win. You're always gonna win. He will always play an A minus, B plus game. He'll never go down to a D or an E like most players do.
Well, he also has the best social game of anybody.
He gets
matches with people that you know would never play anybody else.
Oh, no, he's just off to New York to play. This guy flying him in on a private plane to play backgammon. No, really.
Yeah.
He's thinking, I'm going there today or tomorrow. I'm going to go in there. And the sky's the limit how much they play for, okay? Because they like him. They have to like you, and you cannot fake it. You cannot fake being like being a hustler. It doesn't work.
Yep.
You really got to be a nice person.
Yeah,
that you got to be able to take your loss, and it doesn't really bother you. That's so big. That's why a lot of good players don't get it. They don't get any action. I will get action against people because I don't care if I lose, and I know when to cut it off. If I'm winning, I put the brakes on. Where I'm not going to, you know, if he's winning, I will yell and scream and throw the cup around the room, okay, because they enjoy it.
Yeah.
But you can't do it when you start winning. You got to know when to tone it down.
Yeah.
Do you, some women have written that it helps their game when they flash some boobs. Has that helped you at all in your backgammon career?
Yeah, I would do that, yeah. It's not, that's first, you sick puppy, no.
Oh, when I used to play at the Cavendish back in the mid-70s, there were several of, brawlessness in the Los Angeles area was more common then than it is now, but there were several of the ladies who would regularly wear clothes that, when you're standing over them, which is common in a chouette situation, and so they would get games with much, much weaker players than anybody with... their skill level had
well,
a right
that,
to do.
That reminds me, that I'm going to say the story before I forget. The Cavendish, I was probably back there too. It's on the Beverly Center or something like that.
It was on Sunset Boulevard.
Okay, that's it, right. On the second or third floor, right?
Yeah.
Right,
where Beverly Hills turned into West Hollywood.
Where Don Adams used to play gin.
Adams played there.
He played backgammon too.
Right. Yeah.
The old double fours.
I used to be a magician too, kid. That's how I started. So no, you're talking about the girls flashing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a friend of ours, little Herbie Hirschletter, that started this, and he would pay. And I did this with actually Huck too. Okay, we play backgammon, and the spot would be I would have a hooker going down on him while he's playing backgammon. Okay, and even when you're finished, she had to be attached to you. Okay, it's like there was no disengagement. Everyone who's done this bet with me has gotten crushed.
I'm sure.
Okay, because this all came from little Hirschletter, who's a sick individual.
Not
right?
Chewed, crushed.
Hirschletter would do this with a friend of ours. They would play basketball, and he would hire these hookers. This one hooker to between every I don't know 5 or 10 minutes or every whatever it was to have her way with him, and. Cameron came out, and he was a much better basketball player. Came out, he was so dead before the end of the game, he broke his ankle. And Hirschletter's laughing and just keeps on making. And even Swobo did this bet. It's called the Hirschletter prop bet.
You break your ankle having sex?
Well, no, but he was so weakened after so many times going back to the car with this hooker, right? He was just legless.
All right. This has been enjoyable. Thank you, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
Richard, how can people hear about our episodes and stuff?
Well, first of all, we welcome your questions. You can send them to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. Or you can tweet them at me at RWM21. You can get the show delivered to you automatically every week at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or you can sign up for it at gamblingwithanedge.com. To find an archive of all the old episodes, you can find that at bobdancer.com.
Wait, you can plug Mika Zembic at youtube.com too, can't you?
Oh, there you go. Mika Zembic
at youtube.com to watch her all their piano.
Right.
Spell Mika for us.
Actually, M-I-K-A and Zembic, Zembic. at YouTube and this way here, because if she gets to us, another thing, if she, I think, I can't remember how many, she's not even there, but she gets so many hits on that one song, Toxicity, I think she's got to get the 10,000. I get, she gets $1,000.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. So go get hits on Toxicity by Mika Zembic.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Mika.
We thank you.
Go out and hit Royal Flushes, everybody. Good day.